Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, it's Joe, and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. Are you looking for an automation alternative to open source that's easy to work with for non-developers? Are you also looking for a solution that's easy to design and scale? If so, Test Architect by Logicgear might be the perfect fit for your team. And after you hear the big announcement near the end of this episode, you'll be surprised just how easy it is to get started with. So listen up and discover how Test Architect can help everyone on your team to get started with test automation. Check it out.
Test Talks is sponsored by the fantastic folks at Sauce Labs, the cloud-based automated testing platform that eliminates the need to maintain your own Selenium grid and test infrastructure. Try it for free today. Visit testtalks.com and click on the Sign Up Now link under the homepage sponsor section.
Hey, Hung. Welcome to Test Talks.
Thank you, Joe.
It's awesome to have you on the show. Today, I'd like to talk about Logicgear and your experience with test automation, also your product, Test Architect. But before we get into it, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Okay. I've been doing testing for some time now. But before I got into software testing, I was actually a quality engineer, and I worked in the hardware industry for a number of years and studying quality engineering. And over time, I got into software development and work, you know, as a programmer as well as analyst. And I discovered that in the early 90s, there was a number of theories that software testing is just like hardware testing, where you have to write a lot of documentations and requirements and things like that. And I didn't believe that that was the right model. So I teamed up with a couple of friends of mine, Cam Kaner and Jack Falk, and we wrote this book called Testing Computer Software, which, believing the premise that it's all about exploration, and software is designed to be changed so rapidly, so documentation would not solve that problem. And that's how I really got into testing. And interestingly enough, that years later, the Agile movement codifying how, you know, software development is done, and that's how we follow, you know, that model of software testing as well, with this, you know, less emphasis on documentation, but more emphasis on communication and understanding what the customers want. I founded Logicgear, 24 years ago, and we have been doing testing ever since, and from providing professional services, training, consulting. And since 2001, we started developing Test Architect when Hans Buchwalter came to Logicgear and Joyforce with us. And I don't know if you remember, we had the dot-com demise in around 2000, 2001. And we didn't really know what to do with ourselves. So we decided to build a solution, the soft test automation problem.
Awesome. I'm glad. There's a few things I want to explore there. The first one is I'm glad you brought up the book Testing Computer Software, because it's funny. I know you've authored a few books. And when I was looking at my library today, the very first book I ever bought was Testing Computer Software. And I didn't realize you were actually one of the co-authors until today. So I just want to thank you, because actually I bought this book, first QA book I ever bought. I read it from front to back, and I did an interview for a QA position. That's what started my whole career. So in essence, Test Talks is all these back to you almost. So thank you for writing that book.
Oh, thank you. And by the way, I'm going to go off tangent a little bit. I read your bio and I realized that you and I have something in common. I'm also an avid jazz guitarist. And I didn't go to Berklee School like you did, but I also learned very quickly that you know, rock and roll, rock star is not in my career.
So it's funny you brought that up. As I was researching, I actually saw a video from your company talking about test architecture, and you actually have a clip of you playing the guitar, and I don't know if that was really you playing or if that was an overdub, but it was really nice.
That was me playing. They made me play.
Well, that's awesome. No, that was cool. That's funny. For some reason, I noticed a lot of musicians somehow get into test automation development. It seems a high concentration of testers and automators in music. So I don't know if it has to do with creativity or what.
I think there's a correlation in not only creativity, but also logic as well, because, you know, music has a lot of structure and logic in that, and understanding the basis of, you know, the structure, you know, the mode, the scale, and then taking that and improvising based on those structures, which just requires, creativity, but also with the craftsmanship. So I think that's, to me, I relate a lot of that into thinking about testing and test automation and solving those problems.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely agree. I know it's been a while since you wrote testing computer software. I'm just curious to know, if you can go back in time, is there anything you would have changed, or has anything changed dramatically compared to when this book was written and now, as we see ourselves in agile, shift-left type software development environments?
I think a lot of philosophy about testing, particularly in the context of customer-driven quality, which is, you know, quality means different things to different people, but the quality, the user, the customer plays the biggest role in defining and perceiving what quality is. And I think that philosophy still plays very well today. And I thought that's one thing that we have done really well in terms of understanding that. I think things have changed a lot since that book was published. And a lot of that has to do with the demand of on a test engineer to be a full stack engineer, which just requires not only understanding how programming works, but having to be able to write script, to program list, you know, in one or two languages. And so that's demand plays a key component in being a good test engineer today, whether you do functional automation or API testing or any other type of technical testing. That plays a big part in what we are doing today. Also, the other part of that is, I think it's a big challenge is that we are going through now, but I think it's really good development is what we're seeing in continuous integration, continuous testing, and continuous development, which is also shift the paradigm of how automation ought to be done. In the early days, automation is more thought of as you develop this automation and you run those automation. But now you might be developing that automation, but somebody would take that asset and execute somewhere else. So that's the part that we didn't see when we were writing that book. And I'm sure that there's a lot more that I can think of, but I think I cannot think of right now off the top of my head. But I think that, and also I see this is not related to the book, but being in the business for this many years, I also see the model of testing is being shifted from having a few key senior technical lead and having a large team of tester. Now that has been transformed into having a smaller team, but each test engineers are, you know, very highly capable, and the demand of one-on-one communication is a lot higher than what it used to be.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you brought up a great point. Before, I used to be a one-man show. I used to own automation, do all the automation, and life was good. But now my company moved to agile continuous integration, and now automation has been put onto the sprint team. So that's just a task on the definition of done. But it almost makes it more complicated, if that makes any sense. So I guess before we get into it, I just know there's some functionality within Test Architect that can help with this. But at a high level, what is Test Architect?
So Test, when we designed Test Architect at that time, you know, Mercury Interactive with this automation suite is dominating the market, and I think it's still dominating the market. It has a large part of the market share today, but what we were focusing on, it wasn't about automating tasks. What we were focusing on is solving the problems in which when you have these tests, and the same thinking when we wrote the book, the software will change, meaning that the tests will change. So how do you updating these tests, right? Because creating the tests is one thing. They will change, and how can they will change very rapidly. How do you rapidly change the test and maintaining it and updating it so that you can scale? And that's the thinking behind the design of Test Architect, which is we want to make sure that, number one, we design it so that you can easily create a test with minimum requirement on coding. But engineering-wise, we also want to design that so that it wasn't meant to be a dumbed-down test automation tool. It's easy to use, but it has to have the built-in software engineering method that's embedded in the software, and the workflow enables one to very easily update the test and maintaining the test. So we basically applying what Hans came up with, his keyword, where we decouple the automation in the keyword, and the test logic will be written outside of that. And that's the whole premise of how we've been delivering this solution.
Awesome. Now, for the folks that are listening that aren't familiar with action-based testing, first thing they need to do is listen to my interview with Hans in episode 130. But for the folks that didn't listen to that yet, can you just tell us, Hans, what is action-based testing?
So action-based testing is based on the original keyword-driven method that Hans developed when he was in the Netherlands. What we have thought of, every call to do something like a function call, we treat it as an action. And what we do is you have these common operating system system calls. We create this low level system level actions, and then we have them store into a library. So we have about 400 of them that you can do, you know, low level actions like open file, type some text, or do some events-based kind of action. But what's really unique about action-based is that you can aggregate these actions and make another action out of stringing together these actions. So think of it like Legos. You have these Lego blocks where you can take these Lego blocks and you build a new block, and that will become a new action. And that new block can also be aggregated or be slapped together with other blocks, whether it's the system level blocks or application level blocks, to become a new action. So you can have a low level as type text, and you can have a high level actions as fill out a form, or even higher level actions like create a document, and you have other action to support that particular high level actions. And that's how the product is being designed. So that's one part of that methodology. The other part of the methodology is we actually embed a workflow of a particular test would look like. And we have this concept called test module. And in each of the test module, you would have one or more test cases. And within your test module, you would define specifically the objective of the test, or the test requirements, depends on what language you use. And then you implement this test case. Within the test case, you have this test line. And within the test line, each test line will start with an action. And action normally have parameters, which is, can be data-driven, or sometime if you embedded the data into the action, then you don't have a parameters with that action. But that's the whole concept of what action-based testing is. Does that make sense, Joe? Yeah,
absolutely. It makes automation more maintainable also, because if something changes, you just have one action. It's almost like a method. So if anything changes, you make it to that one place. You don't have to change anything else because everything else inherits it.
Yeah, so we decouple the logic, the test. Usually we have a lot of that, right? So the logic, the test will be written in the test module, and the actual implementation and automation are in the actions. And when you create this action, we have these templates called action definition. And it's sort of like structure, very similar to like the spreadsheet-like interface. So you don't really have to write any code to do that. But again, I also need to emphasize that while you're not writing any code, you really have to understand software engineering, because there are a mini domain-specific language called action-based testing language. So that's some minimum understanding of the structure of how you write an ABT test. But it's all English readable kind of thing.
Awesome. So if someone's not familiar with keyword-driven approach, a lot of people are maybe familiar with behavior-driven approach, and it's kind of the same thing. Using a English-like syntax that calls code underneath, you don't necessarily need to know the code underneath, but you do need someone that actually knows program to create that infrastructure underneath. But once you get there, you can then write this English-like syntax without any knowledge of what's going on in the background.
And the other part of that, Joe, is that it's really not true that that you don't need coding with Test Architect. The model that we designed is that you might need one developer or one automation engineer to support a larger team of 10 or 15 other test developers to write tests in some cases, because in many cases you need to implement a low-level action which requires to write, C-sharp or Python, or in some cases even high-level language like C++ or Java, then that person would come in to support the team. And that's how you really have a complete solution. But if you don't have that, there's really, no solution with really so-called no coding at all. That there's no such thing as no coding.
So I'm just curious to know, if someone has an existing Selenium project, HP used to have something called business process testing, but you needed ALM, you needed all these other stuff, and it was all proprietary information software. So if someone has an existing Selenium project, can they leverage something like Test Architect?
They could. They could leverage with having Test Architect sitting on top of it and treating it as a framework to run Selenium tests. So we have Test Architect as the tool, but we also we have like a separate division that doing professional services. And we kind of like, because we understand that, that there's no one panacea, to solution, to automation solution. So for Selenium, our team would actually build the separate kind of framework that's sitting on top of Selenium to do things that similarly that we would do with Test Architect. So the short answer is yes, but the long answer, it depends on what application you do. In some cases, it might not make sense to use Test Architect in that context. Is it usable? Yes, but depends on the context.
So if someone does use Test Architect, what are some of the other benefits they get out of it that really you think adds value to, like you said, a large enterprise team as more and more folks get involved with automation?
So the biggest benefits that they get is when they have very, very large volume, that we're talking about thousands and thousands of tests. And we often, have this company come to us and they have a problem with improving or increasing test coverage. And when we implement Test Architect, we do something pretty insane, like we get to like 80, 85, sometimes 90% of test coverage. And the reason that we are able to do that is mainly because of the architecture of the tool enabling a larger pool of test engineer that requires less programming skill. And you have just only one or two developers to support this larger pool. So you have a larger pool of resources. So you have more people to write tests to scale. right? So that's number one. But then just go back to the old story, which is, all right, but you write them and the software changes, and what do? So we already have this design in place where it allows us to update the test very rapidly. So at the end of the day, really the biggest benefit is the cost of ownership in terms of, you know, number one, being able to have a very large volume of tests. And number two, it is affordable because it's easier to find, really less expensive to have non-programming staff who can contribute into the automation effort. And at the end of the day, you spend less money and you have a larger volume of tests, you know, for your project. And that's really, to me, that's the win, right? Because, you know, automation, I mean, a lot of people don't think about this, but really, before you even automate, you have to think about, you know, what success would look like. It's sort of like a Stephen, you know, Covey, the seven habits, right? You know, what success would look like, you know, is it the volume of the test? Is it the cost of owning those volume of the tests? And is it the cost of maintaining all of that? So I think a lot of our clients are benefiting by thinking from that perspective, and all the details are basically implementation.
Very cool. So I'm just curious to know if it could help me with the user case that I actually had a conversation with an engineer today. They have a behavior-driven development file, an automation test, and it takes an hour and a half to run. And we also, it's doing a UI test, and we also have an API that they could use to leverage that. And I asked them, are these tests really testing something? Are they really valuable? Are they really covering things that aren't covered already to try to whittle down these tests? So we have a hard time getting that information right now because we have just text files and they have no requirements attached to them, and when there's a new build, we don't know what covers what sometimes. So using a tool like Test Architect help know, not only do you have these 10 tests, but the build you checked in, you may want to run these 4 tests to get the coverage you need. And that way you can get rid of some tests because you might have overlap that you may not have known of.
That's correct. And the modular approach also works really, really well because each module has some specific objective in it. And instead of, you know, you might have thousands of tests, but they are contained in hundreds of modules, and you kind of, you know, have a traceability, have an understanding of the objective of each module. And when you open each module, everybody can read and understand, you know, your test. I think that one of the things that I've been, you know, telling others about test automation is that nowadays, the number one thing you have to think about is transferability, meaning that when you create your tests, you have to make a clear assumption that your tests will be executed, analyzed, and maintained by somebody else. So by thinking that and by understanding, and that's by the way, that's how the world works today. You write your tests, it will be running in the DevOps environment. You know, you're not going to be there to run that test, right? And then if that's not running, that somebody else needs to figure out what's going on. They need to understand that, right? So that's one of the other benefits of Test Architect that it brings in terms of, you know, the manageability and the communication among different members of the team about the test.
Oh, I love that. The reason why I love it is, once again, in an enterprise situation, you normally don't have a small team. You usually have multiple small teams working together for one product. And the nature of business nowadays, you have teams offshore, onshore, contractors come and go, and all of a sudden you have these tests and no one really knows what they're doing. So they're afraid to even touch them or delete them. So I love that concept.
And Joe, I mean, saying it's easier than doing, right? Because, you know, we even today, we have pains with, you know, working with our customer to transform into, you know, that mode. And a lot of our work, you know, in the past was not purely thinking like that. And the whole concept about DevOps with, you know, containers and all of other methodology is making sure that it doesn't matter which environment, which versioning or what it's supposed to work, right? So what that means is your test is the same thing. You're supposed to work. It doesn't matter where it is. And easy said than done, because you do automation, you know. Every time when automation is very fragile, every time when, you know, you change the environment, it might not work anymore. And having to make a transformation into a paradigm where it has to be able to run by somebody else, run on somewhere else, and people still understand it, still be able to analyze the test, be able to maintain the test. That's the part that we need to get there. And some have gotten there already, but many are still not there yet.
So I actually heard a rumor about Test Architect that you're working on something, a big announcement coming. So you just tell us a little bit more about what that rumor might be about Test Architect.
So what we are working on is we are working on releasing a free version of Test Architect. And we are doing a couple of things. The first thing we are doing is restructuring the licensing model. We used to have the professional model for testing web and Windows, and then the mobile version, which is testing web, Windows, and Android and iOS, and then the enterprise version, which is having all of those features plus some other distributed testing feature. Now we just do away with all of that. We just have one enterprise version, would be a paid version, and then we also offer a freemium version, which has full features of the enterprise version, except there's limitation on the number of test cases, which is about 100 tests. That, and so we offer two node locks and 100 tests as a freemium for this. So the thinking behind that is number one is if someone need an alternative to open source, then we offering something that easy to work with for non-programming staff. And as I have described already, it is designed, Test Architect already designed for easy to maintain and to scale to larger test assets as their business grows, and it is free. And also the thinking is we want to think of Test Architect like an industry create automation solution for teams. And in that, we embedded the method and the workflow management in the product, and we want to offer that free to, you know, small business, small development teams. And the philosophy behind that is we want everyone to be able to automate. Nobody would be left behind. And we want to deliver a complex automation that being simplified, accessible for all. And I think that, as you know now, Joe, we are in the culture that embracing, you know, free. So I think we are in a way a little bit behind the curve. So now we want to catch up and make sure that we offer something free to the industry as well to embrace that free culture. So that would be our strategy as we releasing, you know, this upcoming freemium model.
Awesome. I love it. And that's what I really love about it is for people that are skeptical or they don't know how it would work, they can actually try it out in a real world situation and then realize, hey, if I pay for something, I know what I'm getting. You know, a lot of people, right, paying is not a bad word to me. It's just you're getting more benefit. And this is one way where they can say, okay, this is what I get for free. I see the value there. And this is why maybe paying more, I can get this other value also.
And also we have this, in the past, we have this trial users that they always asking us to just give them more time to evaluate. And we thought that maybe the best way to do it is giving people the freemium version. And when they see the benefits and they see the need, then they can grow from there. Then they can buy it whenever. But if they don't want to buy it, then they keep and use the free. Why not?
You've been in business for 20 years. And in the tech world, I think that's unbelievable. Nowadays, Silicon Valley, you have companies come and go. So what are you doing to stay in business? You obviously are listening to your customers and you're building that into your products. Is that how you came about this idea of a freemium product?
Yes. One of the things, and I love your question, Joe, because you know, in this business, you know, you either you know, being a startup company where, you know, go big, raise a lot of money, go big fast, or go home, right? And then you have a small business model. for us to be a small and medium technology company and thinking of building the company to last, we have to constantly looking at, you know, where the industry is going, where the technology is advancing, where innovation is advancing, where business model is changing, because we know that not only technology, innovation, practices are changing, evolving, but also even business model are evolving as well. The customer buys software differently now. They engage with company differently now. So we have to constantly, every couple of years, we have to have a cycle thinking this through and making changes. And that part of the ongoing getting feedback and listening to the market, listening to our customer, and what I call is, what do we have to do to keep ourselves continue to be relevant, okay, to the industry, relevant to the business. What we wrote book 20 years ago, it might be something great, but it's not relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the ongoing transformation we are doing to ourselves, and this is the example of what we are doing.
Awesome. Okay, Hung, before we go, is there one piece of actual advice you can give someone to improve their test architecture testing efforts? Let us know the best way to find you, contact you, or actually get a hold of that freemium product.
So the freemium products will be available on the website. I think that if one advice I have with anyone about automation, I will go back and say it again about something I researched, which is transferability. Testing automation today, regardless of whether you're going to use, Selenium, or you're going to use Unified Functional Tests, or you're going to use Test Architect, think about you build a test, okay, that will be executed, or maybe not now, but in the near future, will be executed by somebody else. Then that person should be able to analyze your test, should be able to analyze your results, and should be able to maintain your test and maintain your results. Because I love to be, 20 years ago, I like automation because, like, I saw developers got beaten up with their code, but the automation engineers, they can do anything. Nobody worry about it. Now that's changing. So I think transferability require transparency in the way that you design tests. And also think about the business. Really, at the end of the day, automation is being in the forefront right now because people seeing it as a business benefit. It's a business solution to compete, right? So therefore, think about your building your test asset as part of the business. It's not about writing the code. It's not about anything other than you are now part of the business solution. It's a big part of the business solution.
Thank you, Hung, for your test automation, test architect, freemium automation awesomeness. For links to everything of value we covered in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com and in the search, type in 155. And while you're there, make sure to click on the free trial button under the exclusive sponsor section to learn all about SOAS Labs' awesome products and services. And if this episode has helped you in any way, why not share it with a friend or coworker? And together we can help spread automation awesomeness to the masses. So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with creating automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
For listening to the Test Talks podcast, head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.